So first of all, the learning we're going to do today should be for Refuah Shleima, for Shoshana Bracha Peril, Bat Mindel Sara. So I thought since Purim's coming up, we spend like this week and next week talking about some of the halachos revolving around Purim, so we could all be equipped to really succeed in the holiday, let's say. So the question we're focused on today is, what exactly is our Purim Seuda supposed to look like? And in case, who is the Purim's here? No one! But... Really? So yes, if you'd like to have a seuda in your dorm, and you want to qualify for some extra cash from JLIC, just kind of, you know, shameless plug right here, sign up to be part of the OU JLIC Perm Project. You get up to $50 for, you know, five people, $5 per head. So definitely worthwhile to check into. Okay, so the question is, okay, I have to have a seuda. How many seudas do I have to have? What's the nature of the seuda? So the first source, the Shulchan Aruch tells us, it's funny, sometimes usually you'll have like Shulchan Aruch and then the Ramah will comment. In this case, in Tafresh Tzadi Hei, the Ramah goes first. He just jumps out, he has to get this out there, which is that it's a mitzvah laharbo sudas purim. So you're supposed to have, increase what you're going to be having at your meal. However, b'suda achas yotzim, meaning as opposed to Shabbos and Yom Tov, where we have multiple meals, especially on Shabbos, we're supposed to have three meals. So Purim is... you're supposed to have a meal, but that's all you need to have. You don't have to be having multiple meals throughout the day. This is based on the Mordechai in Maseches Megillah. All you need to have is one meal. Okay, so the question is, fine, so I don't have to have one meal. What does my meal have to look like, though? Does it have to have bread to make hamotzi? Do I have to have specific types of food? Do I have to have homentashen? You know, what exactly can I have? Can it be vegan? Can it be vegetarian? So... regarding the bread question, so in source number two, the Shari Tshuva quotes from the Chidah, and he says that im asa seudas purim below lechem yotze, that if a person at their meal does not have bread, nevertheless they don't make a hamotzi and they don't bench, nevertheless they fulfill the mitzvah of having seuda on purim. However, the Aruch HaShulchan, who by the way just is interesting, you know, aside, is the Aruch HaShulchan really for, you know, when it was written, was viewed as the halachic, you know, sefer. A lot of today's people go to the Mishnah Berurah as the source for practical halacha. We just realized that the Aruch HaShulchan, given his role as the posik of a community, really was viewed as the authoritative and normative sefer that was out there. So it's always important to read the Aruch HaShulchan. Sometimes he doesn't get so much love that the Mishnah Berurah does. But he says, I saw this sefer. I saw quoted that if you don't have bread, you could still fulfill your obligation of having a suit on Purim. He says, "Vlinira," but it appears to me, "Belo yotza." You're not going to be fulfilling your obligation if you don't have hamotzi. Why? The dumyash de Shabbos v'yom tov. First of all, his argument is that's like a suda on Shabbos and Yom Tov. We know that any suda on Shabbos and Yom Tov, one has to have hamotzi. Now, the idea of lechem mishnah isn't required because lechem mishnah is connected to what? Why do we have lechem mishnah?
The man.
Yeah. So we have the man. So the man, it's true that it fell probably also what would have been Yudad Adar in Midbar, but it's not what we're coming to commemorate because it's not Shabbos. So you don't have to have lechem mishnah, but it's seeming like his first argument, it's like Shabbos and Yom Tov, you have to have hamotzi. He adds the aim mishnah below lechem. I think this is the most important point, which is that definitionally, according to the halacha, when you have a seuda and you have a mishnah, definitionally it requires you to have bread to make hamotzi. He brings proofs from this. You see from Bereishis, the story of Lot in Sodom, where it says v'yas lehem mishnah umatzas ofo v'yochelu. It says that he made them a mishnah, and by the way, what was there? Bread. So it says, oh, you see Aruch HaShulchan, that definitionally to have a mishnah means to have bread. And he also brings a pasuk from Daniel, which is probably one of the few pesukim which you actually can read, unless you know really, you know, ancient Aramaic. Pas begam v'yayim mishteyam. So you see this idea also that bread, it plays a critical definitional role when it comes to a seuda, according to Aruch HaShulchan. This is the way most pesukim assume that we have our seuda. So again, practical piece of advice first is that we should have bread, having hamotzi. Okay, so if I have my hamotzi, I'm having my one meal during the day on Purim, I have my bread, obviously it's going to be after classes because we all have classes this year on Thursday. So what about other things? What kind of other dishes do I need to have? So the Rambam tells us, in Hilchos Megillah B'Chanukah, Perek Bad, Halacha Tetvav, he said, Kizat Chovas Suda, so how do I go about fulfilling my obligation to have a Suda on Purim? He says, Shiochal Basar, Yitakin Suda Naak, if Yashir Tamsi Yado. He says, you should have meat and have the rest of the meal according to your means. So if, you know, if you're very wealthy, you should have, you know, a very impressive and fancy meal. And if you're a college student, so you can suffice with much smaller according to your means. He goes and continues. He says, "V'shosa yayin ashi yishtaker v'yirdem v'shichro." So you should then drink some wine until you become intoxicated, and then you fall asleep due to your stupor. So he talks about that as well. So just analyzing this notion, so the Rav, for Soloveitchik, you flip over the page, in his Hari Kedem, in the first Chelek, Simen Reshe, so 1205, so he says, so it was kind of confusing how I copied and pasted it, so I just had the, if you follow the A, B, C, D, E, F, you'll follow the lines of the paragraphs. He says, he quotes the Rambam we just read, which is how you have to go ahead and have a Suda. He says, the fact that it's interesting, in this Halacha, the Rambam connects the Suda to Mishloach Manos. So why is that interesting? Because in general, it's a huge, very, we actually probably talk about it next week, when we talk about Matanos Levionim and Mishloach Manos, there's a very famous Chakira about what the nature of the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos is. Gabriel, what's the famous Chakira?
Whether it's for Reu or for the Suda.
Exactly. So am I doing this because I'm doing it to provide my friend with the needs to have their Suda? Or is it to increase fraternity and brotherhood as to a antidote to what Haman tried to do with the Jewish people, which is create a fracturing and a discord amongst the Jewish people, to rather rehabilitate that and create community and connection. So we're going to talk about this next week because there's lots and lots of interesting nafkaminos, also practical but also conceptual of that chakira. But this is very clear, says the Rav, according to the Rambam, that he says, "Hinei nir meharam b'de mitzvah mishloach manos hi miguf mitzvah ha-seuda." So says the Rav, it's very clear according to the Rambam at least, that he holds like the first side of the Chakir, which is that it's all about, or he said according to you, the second side. The second side of the Chakir, which is about providing a Suda for your friend. The fact that in the Halacha, he opens with talking about the Suda, and then he connects it and transitions to talking about the Mishloach Manos, seeing that the same thing is required of both. That's, therefore, if that's true, he says that means that what does it mean for now, my Suda? It means, if you're telling me that they're intricately linked between the Suda and Mishloach Manos, right? That the Mishloach Manos is the means to helping someone else, to furnish them with a Suda, does that mean that how many dishes do I have to minimally have? I have to have two, right? So he says, V'kamoshikasav, shiocho basar yitakin suda, hari demavad habasar, ochol o tavshil. So he says, minimally, when it comes to our sudos, according to the Rambam at least, and many think this is how we paskin, we should be having meat. Is that just sufficient to have my bread and my meat, and you have some other dish as well?
In the suda.
Huh? Yeah, in your suda. Exactly. This is because of the conceptual link between the suda and Mishloach Manos, according to the Rambam. So now, there's always a difference of opinion. Yeah, Asher.
Then why wouldn't you ask, if you're in Mishloach Manos, with the goal being that the person's going to use it for the suda, why wouldn't you have to give them, like, bread or something like that? As opposed to just giving two different brachos.
I mean, you definitely could. I mean, he doesn't specify it has to be. You're saying if it's necessary to create a suda to have bread, so, I mean, it could just be on a practical consideration. I mean, bread is probably, at the time, was the cheapest thing to acquire, right? But definitely, I mean, today, people go ahead, they'll be like, I remember when I was in yeshiva, my big thing was I got some of the salami and a chal roll. There you go. Both of Mishloach Manos, there's your suda right there. But in fact, the biggest proof for this whole point is the Gemara talks about in Megillah how the different Amorayim, they would go ahead and basically would like switch off like hosting one another. Like Gemara says that this way they accomplish both Mishloach Manos and their suda. However, there's always going to be a conflict and a difference of opinion. So the Magen Avraham makes a very interesting point. He says, so he's trying to figure out why they think it is you should having basar at your suda. So one reason he suggests is because, well, we know it says in the Megillah, it says Yemei, any laners here? Yemei, but Yemei Mishta V'Simcha. So these are, V'Yemei Mishta V'Simcha. So these are days of, you know, celebratory feasts and rejoicing. So we have this idea in Hilchos Yom Tov, which is Ein Simcha Ela Be Basar V'Yayin. So we all these are some of the ones we know. So the Magen Avraham says, wait a second. That's true. So we have this idea. It's a Gemara. It's Paskin in the Rambam. The Ein Simcha Ela Basar V'Yayin. The question is, when does that hold true? Does it hold true even today? Or is it limited to a specific period of time, i.e. when the Beis Hamikdash stood? So the Magen Avraham thinks based on his analysis in Tuf Kuf Chavtes, he says that just because it means simcha, doesn't this thing mean that you actually are obligated to have meat, because he thinks that in chiyuv lechol basar rak bizman shebeis hamikdash kayam. He says that the obligation to eat meat on Yom Tov, and that's the proof that you're bringing, that simcha equals wine and meat, was only operative, was only true in the Beis Hamikdash. However, most poskim disagree, and they think that yes, that there's an obligation to have a meat dish at their Purim Suda. So far, we know we have to have a Suda, we know that we have to have bread, and we know that we're supposed to have meat. So it could be, again, just when we're thinking about the sudas we're going to be having, these are important pieces to when it comes to making them. Okay, the next question is, though, What about perm night? Now, there's a major custom. It's cropped up basically in the yeshivas. But there's not only is there an obligation to get drunk on perm day, there's also an obligation to get drunk perm night. It's not true. But the Ramah does tell us that if you have your suda, if you have your suda at night, meaning the night of Purim, right after your your breakfast, right after the Megillah, you don't fulfill your obligation. This is source 7. Shulchan Aruch says, Sudas Purim she'asa b'layla lo yatzei d'chalas. So you don't fulfill your obligation. However, adds the Ramah, mikol makom gam b'layla yismach v'yarbek tzas b'suda. So you can't really hold it, you can't really blame the people who think that there's an obligation to get drunk on Purim night, because it does say in the Ramah, so it sounds like, oh, there has to be simcha there as well. And we just said, simcha equals basar and yayin, so ergo, I need to get drunk for the masiba that's going to be going on, but that's not how we paskin. But we should think about that. When we have our breakfast, we're having a suda, we're getting together on Purim night, it should be, it's Purim still. It's not just like, oh, Purim only starts during the day. It's that we should have still a suda that reflects that it's a joyous time, that it's Purim, and not just ignore the Purim night. So now... But it's not, he says, if you have a suda, he says, meaning you're going to eat, right? Minimally 2 meals a day, three meals a day. So the point is that for dinner, right, so that's all the question is, because breakfast, what's usual fare for breakfast?
Cereal,
bagels, cream cheese, lox. So maybe we should have, hello, we should have some like quiche, maybe some like an omelet bar. You got to elevate things for Purim, right? We could dream as much as we want. But the point is to say is that it's not saying it's no chi of suda of Purim. The point is that any suda you're having should be elevated some way to reflect the fact that it is Purim. The last thing is actually an interesting thing that the Aruch HaShulchan points out. He says, Yesh mi shekasav, sheyesh nagu shelachol basar b'leil yudal. Okay, so you're going to have this fancier meal. It's not your suda, but it's a fancier meal on Purim night. So he says there's a custom of people not to serve meat at that evening meal and not even to do it in the morning, meaning not to have meat Purim night. Have to have Purim morning, only Purim day when you're having your suda should you have meat. Shalai, what would be the concern? So what would you say? Why would you think that you shouldn't have meat then? Yeah?
You want it to be special for your suda.
Right. I mean, you could assume, you can make the mistake that, if they're having, a nice brisket Purim night, let's say people have brisket in the morning. Brisket's good any time of day. So people will be thinking that, you're fulfilling your mitzvah. And the reality is you can't fulfill your mitzvah except during the afternoon. Or you have your suda. However, the Aruch HaShulchan thinks this idea is a little ridiculous. He says, "Davar Teimahu beins minag." He says, "In Sidata." He says, "I find this idea of refraining from meat for your dinner is a bit bewildering." He says, "It's not our custom." The question is, can you think of any other reasons why there would be this custom to not have meat on Purim? Any other reasons?
So you just broke your fast.
So that would be a very technical reason. Who knows? Maybe having me is good. Yeah.
It's the whole reason we celebrate Purim. The battle wasn't over yet at that time.
So the battle wasn't over yet. But why not have meat? Why would it be specifically meat?
We're supposed to feel for our fellow brethren.
So since meat is very chashuv, you're saying, therefore, we're going to kind of like a Lent-esque type of thing. We're not going to have any meat. Possible, but what else do they think? What's another thing that Purim is associated as? It's true. It was a major hatzalah for the Jewish people. We were, kind of like we're faced with annihilation and we were saved. But what else does Purim represent?
I'm not necessarily looking forward to going off that. Maybe we shouldn't celebrate right away after so much, because also a lot of other people died. Maybe we shouldn't.
So this, again, these are very creative ideas. You're saying based on the Medrash says that the Malachim want to say Shira, and God says Masa Yad Tov Mayam, my creations that Tzelem Elokim are dying. So how could you rejoice? And we do have this value in halacha that we don't rejoice over other people suffering. 100%, and again, similar, building off what Jared said. But, yeah, Tyler, you're going
to
say something.
Maybe because the only reason the story happened in the first place is because they started to assimilate and they decided not to go back to Israel and all that stuff.
And so therefore, what would be the reason
according
to that?
It could be kosher meat.
So you're saying, reason why we got in this mess was by eating Achash Verosh's party where you ate trave.
Yeah.
So not, okay, these are very creative. These are all great answers. But I think sometimes it's the most simple one we always look over. It's like, this can be so obvious. So Purim also, this is important to think about when we think about how we celebrate Purim, is that Purim isn't just a day of jubilation of being saved. It is that. But in addition to, as the Gemara tells us, Kimu v'Kiblu. Right? The Gemara in Shabbos tells us that God lifted, so to speak, metaphorically, the Har Sinai over the Jewish people. What that really means is that at that moment of Har Sinai, God's presence and existence was so clear that we didn't have a choice. We basically were compelled to accept the Torah. And so Rava says in the Gemara on Shabbos, then from that moment onwards, the Jewish people had a great excuse. What do you mean? You can't hold me accountable for when I failed to uphold the values of the Torah. You forced me into this. You coerced me, right? Coercion. I'm not responsible for my actions. Says the Gemara, when did we become responsible for our actions again? The time of Purim. Kimu v'kibul. And therefore, say many meforshim, that this idea that Purim is another Kabbalah Satorah. Right? Kabbalah Satorah isn't just on Shavuos. It's actually on Purim. It's like the more important holiday of a Kabbalah Satorah is actually Purim because we did it volitionally. We did it voluntarily. We did it biratzon as opposed to being coerced into it. If that's true, so what do we do on Shavuos? What do we eat?
Dairy.
We eat dairy. We don't eat meat. And therefore, some say maybe that's the basis of this custom. Why? So there's literally 100 different answers that are given. One of them is very simple, is because, just purely halachically, they didn't have any meat utensils they could use. Everything was based on the treif pots they were using. Therefore,
can you really say that they were not forced into this one when they were threatened with being destroyed also?
Well, yeah, it's a great question. I think the value of the Gemara is trying to highlight, which is that, yes, they were forced to the annihilation. The turn of events were such that all of a sudden, miraculously, v'nahapachu, right, that they became, not on the bottom, but rather, Mordechai becomes prime minister, they have the ability now to defend themselves. Not just defend themselves, they have a tremendous victory. They annihilate, they completely destroy their opponents. So the question is, this is a great point, which is that, you know, Soloveitchik always says, whenever something happens, both for good or for bad, the answer as a Jew isn't lama, isn't why, it's lama. Meaning, what am I supposed to do with this experience, and how can I integrate into who I am? So it's really lama, for what? So you can take this experience of Yeshua and say, okay, whatever, it was really nice, now we're saved, and great. Go back to what I was doing beforehand, which was assimilating. Now they say, no, we see at God's hand, even working amongst the background of all these, behind the curtain, so to speak, and we're going to take this opportunity to rededicate ourselves passionately, voluntarily to Torah values. So it's true that I hear your point. I think the answer, though, is that they took as a response to this tremendous moment in history to really rededicate themselves. So some suggest that may be why there's a suggestion of not having meat and specifically having dairy for part of the meals to highlight the fact that it is also a Kabbalah Satorah. But just like on Shavuos, do we have every single meal dairy? No, it's still Yom Tov, so you have to have basar. So therefore, to sort of balance this out, these two competing values. On the one hand, it's Yom Tov, so it's like Shavuos, so therefore you have to have meat, you also have to have dairy, and therefore some say that's the basis of this minhag. However, the Aruch HaShulchan seems pretty adamant that this is not our custom, and therefore, if you want to have breakfast with brisket, you want to have brisket for your morning breakfast, and you want to have it for your meal, it seems like that is okay. So again, to summarize, you have an obligation to have a suda. You only need to have one. You have to have bread there. You have to make a hamotzi. You have to have wine. You have to have meat. And lastly, that even on the Purim night, you should increase your meal in some way. You should elevate it. And though there is a custom among some to not have meat during Purim night and Purim morning, only having it for the Suda, nevertheless, it's okay if you want to have your burgers or wild leftover brisket or cholent for Purim night. Any questions?
Yeah.
Bread-based alcohol. You're saying to have
beer and scotch or whatever.
it's a really what well, that you should have.
Not wine. Purim
no, it's like, no, it's like I'm gonna have wine on Purim day, so I'll leave that for them. But then grain alcohol, you gotta have to, like, you know, it's more geschmack. So
I don't know if that's. I think there's another reason.
You should just know that. When I was in KBY, sort of Blachman, so Reshit, Nishma, there we go, KBY, all together, come together. So Rav Blachman said that when he was studying with Rav Huttner would have scotch on Purim. And so that was his minhag. No, during the Suda. So he would have, his minhag was to have scotch at the Suda. So I knew that. And my father had just come for a wedding. And apparently, you know, Israelis, they don't like scotch. They just can't appreciate it. They like arak. They like vodka. No scotch. So he brought this really nice bottle. He went, took it to his nephew's wedding, and like maybe a tenth of it was drunk. So before he left, he's like, "Here, happy Purim. Give me the bottle." So there was like a goblet, which was probably like, imagine just like a chalice bar and just this, fill it to the brim, Blachman drank it, and then he gave a mimer for 3 hours. It was the best thing ever. I haven't recorded. If you ever want to, it's the best. Like literally, and like every time, you hear like every 10 minutes, he's like, He's like, he gives me like every 10 minutes, he gives me like a shout out, like thanking me for the scotch. So that's why I like it. But yes, yeah, so I don't know the base of that. If you find a mukhor for that, it'd be very interesting. It would explain a lot.
We can have the